Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 61, The Morning After. I'm Jesse Kiefer. My lovely partner in crime, who's usually here with me on The Morning After, Jen Tullock, is making us proud off-Broadway right now. She's in a play. It's called On the Head of a Pin. I can't wait to see it. So she'll be gone for the next 3 weeks. But while she's gone, I encourage everyone listening to go see her play. You can buy tickets at www.strangemencompany.com and then follow the links. We have a really great show today. In studio, Nick Gorvick of Jenny and Francois Selections. He's one of my go-to guys for natural wine and is putting together a summit of winemakers for Natural Wine Week. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Thanks.
We'll talk to him about the natural wine craze and the upcoming events for Natural Wine Week. Later, we'll also hear the little clip we put together of The Morning After and Heritage Radio Network at Eat, Drink, Bloody Mary at La Piccio. That was a couple weeks ago, and somehow someone crazy let Jen stand on a table and announce the winners. So I'm looking forward to hearing that package. Later in the show, also, what's on the menu at Chardonnay's? It is Oscar Sunday. Of course, Chardonnay's is having an Oscar party, so I can't wait to hear about the drink specials. But first, our favorite segment, front of the house.
It's your favorite story. It's front of house. It's a front of house.
Front of house is our segment where we dive into the depths of server shame. Here to share her front of house story is server extraordinaire and awesome storyteller Megan Kenny. She's also one of my servers at Terroir Tribeca.
Hi, Jess.
I can't wait to hear your story. So without further ado, let's hear it.
All right. Guys, this is entitled The Cat Rat, in honor of a quite wonderful experience I once had, in short form, story form. As I squinted the exhaustion of last night's closing shift out of my eyes, I realized dazedly my GM is talking to me. He scratched his enormous gut and asked me again to go change the soda lines in the basement. Abruptly, I told him I was the worst candidate for this job due to my aversion of all things corn syrup. He rolled his eyes and reassigned me to catch-ups. Really, I don't want to go in the basement because of a new tenant, respectfully called the Cat Rat. This aggressive giant claimed the dirt-floored space as his own. As a rule, I stayed away. Relieved, as I trudged to the kitchen, my oversized Oxford crumpled and untucked, I heard my boss yell after me, "We're going to have to talk about my uniform later." In the kitchen, the prep cooks huddled in the corner with weapons. A shadow caught my eye at the corner of the prep line. Frozen, I locked eyes with the one and only Cat Rat. Face off. I shuffled a little to the left as I started to sweat. The Cat Rat swayed with me. Its beady little eyes trained on me, I backed away as it started to come at me. Breaking into a dead sprint out the swinging diner doors, the Cat Rat flew behind me. This can't be real. I'm supposed to be merging catch-ups. Now I'm evading an oversized rodent. It can't possibly be following me, but as I jag left, the furry beast follows. I hear a dim roar and realize that a small troop of broom, spatula, and knife-wielding prep cooks had entered the chase. The scene is ludicrous. Other sleep-deprived servers watch, mouths agape. My boss idly just watched from the bar. Feeling like the roadrunner, I knew I had to win. I have no insurance. It's the restaurant industry. If this thing gives me rabies, I'm out of luck. I jumped on top of a sturdy booth, with Senor Cat Rat dashing under the table. My cooks have gathered around beneath me and are shouting, cursing, swatting, and throwing thing. One cop-style chase scene later, and we have the upper hand. Shaken, I sit on the table and realize the sound I hear is myself. I'm openly wailing. My boss wanders in, surveys the disaster zone. He assigns someone to clean up the mess and the rest back to the kitchen. He wonders if there's a procedure for taking care of the body. He tells me to get back to catch-up merging and reminds me we still need to talk about my uniform violations later. It's only 9 a.m. The Cat Rat is dead and brunch is about to be served. The overeager masses await outside, greedy faces pressed up against the glass, and the day marches on.
Oh, the poor cat rat.
No, this thing was terrifying.
Like, actually, how big was it?
I mean, it was sizable. Like, if you imagine, like, a baby kitten, but it has patchy, like, wiry fur. It was really quite awful. Really yellow eyes, sort of a snaggle tooth going on.
It makes me think of this this rat squirrel thing that looked kind of like also a pig I saw in the Bronx once.
Yes.
But it was really the most horrifying picture. Like, just imagine, like, a cat-sized rat squirrel with a bushy tail, but then with a pig's nose.
Yeah.
I have no idea what sewer depth party that thing came out of.
Deep, deep, deep underground.
Speaking of sewer depth party, we'll be right back on The Morning After. Talk about some natural wine with Nick Gorvick of Jenny and Francois Selections.
You're listening to Snickers by Obesity on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
And we're back here on The Morning After. In studio is Nick Gorvick of Jenny and Francois Selections. They are kind of the kings of natural wine these days. Do you agree? Or you made a little face at me.
We're one of many of importers of only natural wine, but we've been doing it for 12 years. We're not the longest, but I think we have a strong portfolio, yeah.
So what do you feel that Jenny and Francois Selections has kind of brought to New York and to the world of natural wine?
Well, the company's been around for 12 years. You know, Jenny and Francois started this thing. When they started, natural wine as a term was really unknown. You know, and I don't want to say that they brought that term to New York or anything. Other people brought it as well, but they're really kind of on the vanguard of that, really pioneers. You know, walking around with their suitcase full of wine that in the beginning nobody wanted to taste or try and nobody was interested in. Nobody was talking about it, indigenous yeast or organic viticulture, any of that stuff, and now it's like what everyone talks about. So they're really ahead of the curve.
How do they go about seeking out these winemakers and different wines?
Well, Francois, it's pretty, I think, unique for an importer because Francois lives in Chablis, in northern Chablis. He makes his own wine. He makes natural wine himself. You know, and he just travels all over France. He's friends with all the winemakers. He's really he's a guy who brings together different winemakers from different areas and kind of lets them share all their methods. And so a lot of times he'll just find wines because someone asks him, hey, what kind of wine should I make? You know, and then he helps them and eventually the wine's ready and we import it. You know, and he does a lot of traveling and tasting, obviously, also too. Most recently into Italy. It's our biggest new exploration.
Because I feel like you probably, obviously, Francois being from France, he started with a lot of French winemakers. And I mean, has everyone across the world been practicing this way, or are they being influenced by people in France? And
you know, I think there's some influence in Italy from the French natural wine scene for sure. But the Italian natural wine scene has like a life of its own at this point. I think they're a little more organized, I see. They have groups that they get together in and talk about this stuff. There's Vin Natur, and they're really organized. They do testing of people's wines to see how much pesticides is in it. And, you know, so there's definitely some crossover. And I think, you know, it's great when the Italians can meet with the French people and talk and exchange ideas. But, yeah.
What constitutes natural wine? It feels like a craze word right now that...
You know, it's not a certification. It's not a legally defined term in any way, and everyone has a slightly different definition of it. For us, our definition is pretty simple. It just means nothing taken away and nothing added. So that includes, you know, fake tannins, fake acid, adding alcohol, taking alcohol away, use of oak for flavoring, you know, and yeast. A lot of wines use added yeast in a powdered form, and the wines that we work with that we call natural, basically none of them work with any of that. It's all indigenous yeast that grows on the skins in the vineyard and comes with it naturally.
Now, working with natural wine, I feel like there's a lot of risk as far as spoilage goes. Your product is a living being. Am I wrong in saying that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's not much use of sulfur. It varies by the wine. Some wines can handle less sulfur than others. But on the whole, there's much, much less sulfur in a natural wine than otherwise. And in my mind, I heard this recently, and I really like this idea. When you add sulfur to a wine, you're kind of like taking a picture of the wine and freezing it. The wine's not going to change as much. When there's very little sulfur in a wine, it's more like a living thing that's always changing. So there's certainly some volatility there. Not all of the wines that have no sulfur at all or low sulfur travel well from Europe. Yeah, that's kind of our job to select the ones that we think do travel well
and have a shelf life for say someone who is pouring it at their restaurant or you know, someone who's selling it in retail. I mean, it is a risk, but what are the different characteristics that you find in natural wine?
For me, the things that I really go for, there's a lightness in general. Like when you find in a given appellation, say even Bordeaux, if the wine is a natural Bordeaux, it's going to be much lighter than all the other Bordeaux in that area, and that really appeals to me. I think when you have lightness, that brings in so much more room for subtlety and for earthy flavors, and you know, there's less of everything else. There's less fruit, there's less tannin, so you have this subtlety that really gets me. You know, there's so many different kinds of natural wine, so it's really difficult to sum them up, but for me, that's like the main unifying factor.
Do you feel like with the fragility of a lot of natural wine, it has ageability?
Absolutely, yeah. That's something that doesn't really get talked about a lot, and a lot of people feel like, oh, these wines aren't going to age at all. And not all of them do. Not all wines age, but there are wines that I've tasted that are just absolutely phenomenal after 5 years, after 10 years, after 15 years. It's, yeah, you don't need tannin. A lot of these natural wines have really good acidity. And I think acidity can be a great preserver as well as tannin. And that's something that the wine world hasn't really explored so much. But
now there are a lot of buzzwords out there: organic, biodynamic practicing. What's kind of the differentiation between all of those? I mean, that's a huge question, but
yeah. Well, organic and biodynamics are in some sense the same thing. There's no pesticides or herbicides in the field. I always say biodynamics is kind of like organics on steroids. It's inspired by the teachings of Rudolf Steiner, who was really just collecting word-of-mouth traditions of farming from before the age of technology. There's use of preparations that they spray over the vines to keep them healthy. It's a holistic system of thinking that they're taught to think of the vineyard as a whole creature and think about their relation to that creature, and it involves using animals and having a lot of diversity in the farm, lots of other crops, and a lot of organic people use a lot of those ideas too, but biodynamics is like a specific school of thought.
I mean, it's an incredibly specific practice. Like, if anybody has a couple hours, go and read about it. It's like planting horns that have been stuffed with manure in a certain part of the field or within the compost, and then spreading that compost. And yeah, it's like, isn't it based on like on the moon? And
the moon is involved. Yeah. And a lot of people really attribute Rudolf Steiner, this Austrian philosopher, to coming up with this stuff, but that's not really true. It's really the I think it's the Carthusian or the Carpathian monks. Yeah. Thousands of years ago were just toying around with all these different things, and you know, they had a lot of time on their hands, and they wrote down everything. And they figured this stuff out. You know, some of it is a little bit spiritual and mystical. And, you know, today in the modern age, we kind of like raise our eyebrows at that stuff. But it works. There's no doubt about that.
What do you feel kind of spurred the natural wine movement? Was it, you know, because I feel like people are making wine in these different AOCs in France, and their practices are not within the constraints of their AOC. So if someone making wine in you know, Chevronie cannot necessarily call it Chevronie if they are not practicing a certain way. You know, did the natural wine movement come out of people just wanting to make their own wine and not stick to the constraints?
I don't totally agree with what you just said. Oh. I think, you know, a lot of times people don't work in the appellation, and that's not because they can't. It's because they choose not to. And the reason they choose not to could be one of a thousand different reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, it might be because they're worried they might get rejected because people taste the wines and they think, oh, that's different. That's not like this. And then they've paid a fee to apply, and it's, you know, it's a big nightmare they want to avoid. But a lot of people are just not even trying. You know, they don't like the AOC system. They think it supports industrial practices and pollution and, you know, chemicals and all those horrible things. Yeah, but the natural wine movement, I think it started as a reaction. You know, people sort of in the 60s, 50s, that era, started using all these chemicals. And, you know, certain people just saw these chemicals being used and said, no, I don't want to do this anymore. This isn't the way my grandfather worked, and wanted to turn back the clock and go back to the old way and be more simple.
The Natural Winemakers Week coming up. What are the dates? The 28th.
It starts the 28th, and it goes through the following Thursday, which is the 6th of March. Yeah, so we're bringing in 15 winemakers from Italy, France, California, Oregon. And we're doing a bunch of events. There's classes, dinners, free tastings at stores, parties, runs the gamut.
There is one party at the Ides.
Yes.
At the Wythe Hotel, which is the rooftop bar at the Wythe Hotel. And what really drew my attention was the DJ who's going to be there. DJ Natural Wine. Who is DJ Natural Wine?
I don't know who the DJ is. I have no idea who the DJ is. I don't do that. You have to call the Ides and ask them. That's their deal.
No, just like it made me laugh. I mean, I know Jules Dresner DJs at the Ides.
I've heard that. Yeah, I think he's DJing tonight, actually. I saw. Yeah, go check him out.
I don't know if he's DJ Natural Wine.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. The flyer says DJ and then Natural Wine. And there's a vine under the Natural Wine with the electricity coming out of
it. Yeah.
And that's the Natural Wine. The DJ is the guy that the electricity is shooting into.
Oh, okay. So the Natural Wine gives him power.
Yeah, electricity just jumps out of those wines and right into the DJ's headphones. That's how it works.
Well,
yeah.
I think someone out there should snag up the DJ name, DJ Natural Wine. That would be pretty incredible. So, when you say that you have classes, where are those being held?
So, there's a couple things where you could take a class kind of thing. Astor is doing a party. They do this for us every year. That is Saturday. And if you want any details on this, you can go to our website. It's jennyandfrancois.com/NWW13. The Astor event always sells out. It's super popular. That's from 2 to 5. And there are going to be some seminars there. They have like a really cool, it's their event center. They have a really cool classroom space. So it's only $25 to get into that. It's going to sell out super soon. I just checked and it's not sold out yet. And then the next day, there's a class at Cork Buzz Wine Studio. Laura, who's a master sommelier, is going to be leading that with a couple of our winemakers talking. That's from 3:30 to 5 on Sunday, the 3rd.
Well, so when you're done listening to The Morning After, then maybe you can go to... I'm just kidding. No, you should definitely go to Laura's class. It's going to be incredible.
You can listen to the podcast after.
You're right. Fine.
Subscribe
you're right.
on iTunes.
You know, not everyone has to listen to it live, although the true fans listen to it live. Nick, what do you think is on the forefront for natural wine? I mean, I know I just tasted with you a delicious Pinot Noir from Oregon. Is the U.S. kind of catching up?
No, it's in its infancy. You know, there's... if I had to say, I guess maybe 10 to 20 winemakers in California working this way. And they're all making great wines. But, you know, some of them started quite a while ago compared to the way Italy's gone. I mean, in Italy now you have 300, 400. You know, 10 years ago, I don't know what it was, maybe 10. So California is definitely, you know, California is kind of the nexus of technical winemaking, technology. And there's a lot of resistance, I think, to that idea. Like, I know that the people who make those natural wines sell them in L.A. a lot, a little bit in San Francisco, and then nowhere else in California. So,
I mean, I grew up in Arizona, and while Arizona is not on the forefront of natural winemaking, like, you cannot find any natural wine. Like, you really can't. Any stores, there's nothing out there. And I mean, I think that's crazy. I don't know why.
Well, it's just, you know, a lot of people just don't know it exists, first of all. They're not the customers aren't asking for it. You know, sometimes the buyers of these wines are scared because the wines taste different, although there are many natural wines that people would not think were strange if they tasted them the first mm-hmm. time. That's one thing we try to get across. I think our portfolio is particularly strong in that. We have a lot of wines that are that appeal towards the mass kind of palate. You know, I mean, they don't have big oak ever, so they're not going to have that. But, you know, not crazy, crazy, funky, earthy kind of things going on. So, you know, it just takes time. It's definitely expanded in California. Like I said, LA is booming. So it'll spread.
Well, Natural Winemaker Week won't hurt.
Yeah.
Check it out. JennyandFrancois.com. It is February 28th through March 6th, you said?
Yep.
I'm sure I'll be there.
Yeah.
We'll be right back on The Morning After.
You're listening to Heaven by Obesity on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
HeritageRadioNetwork.org was at the Eat Drink Bloody Mary competition at La Picho on February 9th in the Lower East Side of New York City, and it was a blast. I was there with Jen Tullock and Jesse Kiefer from The Morning After, and our executive director, Aaron Fairbanks.
Hey, this is Jack Inslee with HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're here at the Eat Drink Bloody Mary competition. It's packed full of people holding more Bloody Marys in their hands than they can drink. I've seen a Bloody Mary with scotch in it from the Wren. I've had the Roberta's Classic Bloody Mary, a Union Square cafe. It's absolutely packed here. So, I'm here with Jen Tullock and Jesse Kiefer, who are two of the judges, we can say, for today. And they've devised a grading system for the Bloody Marys. I want to ask Jen about that grading system. Jen, how are you judging these?
There are three very important elements of the Bloody Mary to me. It's a 5-point grading system. On a scale of 1 to 5, I'm looking for creative ingenuity. I'm looking for viscosity, because I like a thick, viscous Bloody Mary that, essentially, that drink should be a meal. So if you're giving me some thin bullshit with one little garnish, you're not going to register on my scale. And thirdly, I'm just looking for overall taste. Is it smoky? Is it spicy? Is it peaty? Is it sexy? We'll see how it goes.
I caught up with Aaron Fairbanks, who was also judging in the competition.
What are some of the traits you look for in a Bloody Mary that excites you?
I have to say, my favorite thing about the Bloody Mary is all the snacks that go in the Bloody Mary. So I want a Bloody Mary with, like, celery stick, beef stick, you know, pickle, peppers, carrots. Here today's been awesome. I've had pickled porcinis, I've had pickled mozzarella, I've had slices of bacon. I'm like, the more snacks you can pack into the drink, the better.
So Jen and Jesse from The Morning After went out to taste the Bloody Marys and to chat with some of the participants.
Chrissy Harris from The Wren, what kind of Bloody Mary are you making?
Today I wanted to make a smoky and spicy Bloody Mary. It's called Smoke 2 in the Morning, fill in the blank. And I infused Tito's vodka with New Mexican Hatch chilies that were smoked. And then in my actual Bloody Mary mix, I've made my own pickled long red chili kind of sauce. And there's chipotle in there and habanero and smoked salt, smoked paprika, kind of get the idea. And then I wanted to finish it with something that's smoky, so I wanted to go with mezcal, but it just wasn't vibey. So I made a chance choice, and I went with Ardbeg. And I think it kind of gives it that like perfect amount of like savory smoke that I wanted.
Yeah. Do you have
a terrible Bloody Mary story, whether it's where you made a Bloody Mary, the location was terrible, the Bloody Mary was terrible, or what resulted after you drinking that Bloody Mary was terrible.
Oh, wow. I've probably had too many bad Bloody Marys in my life. They're probably usually at a bar when you know you shouldn't order one, but you're like, just saw them go out, it looks okay. I can't remember exactly the last time I had a bad one, because I've learned my lesson where I don't order from places I don't trust. But I would say usually what my worst Bloody Mary experience is when somebody tries to put too much stuff in it, and it just ends up tasting like, you know, a garbage can. But I don't know. I'm pretty fond of Bloody Marys in general. So
let me ask you this, because this really is the bedrock of my Bloody Mary journalism right here. Yes or no, airplane Bloody Marys?
Yes.
Jesse?
Yes.
Yes. So we're here with a gentleman from Colicchio & Sons, about to taste the Bloody Verde. What can you tell us about this special drink?
So it's based off of almost salsa verde, but with a lot of seasonal ingredients and local ingredients that we had at the time. So it's green tomatoes, tomatillos, cilantro, jalapeno chilies, Fresno chilies, and a horseradish sorbet. And it's all kind of, it's all blended into a puree, and then with a little Aleppo chili and lime zest salt and pickled shishito peppers.
It looks like a tornado went through your station here.
It did. It was kind of a hey, we want to make it feel like someone's had a lot of fun drinking at our bar, and so we wanted to make a little mess for it.
It looks like someone definitely had some fun.
So we're here with Joe Campanelli, the owner of Lartusi, Lapiccio, Amphora, Dell'Anima, and also hosting this Eat, Drink, and Bloody Mary event at Lapiccio right now. Tell me how much work went into to getting this together.
Oh, I barely even know how much work, because we have such a great team, and everyone helped out and chipped in so much that my portion was very small. So it was a lot of coordination by a lot of other people that were not me.
Well, you're very humble. So why Bloody Marys?
I think Bloody Marys are something that a lot of people really like, apparently. It's a fun thing. It's a way to get creative around a cocktail while still staying true to what that cocktail essentially is. And I think it just makes sense for the time of day that we wanted to do it. We couldn't close out Lapiccio at night for a cocktail competition because we'd be just missing out on so much business. But to do it in the afternoon when we have all this great light, do something brunch time, it just makes sense to have a Bloody Mary contest as well.
Do you have any terrible Bloody Mary stories where you had to have one that was awful, you had one in a terrible situation, you made one, you spilled one?
Well, yes, actually. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Bloody Marys. That's the dirty little secret. Actually, I think this event has made me more of a fan, because I see how creative people get. Even Naren over here at Saxon and Parole, I'm drinking this, and it's a very, like, sessionable Bloody Mary, a very, like, drinkable Bloody Mary. But when we first opened Dell'Anima, we had no bar manager. I had no experience behind a bar, and I had to put together the cocktail list. And when I was first trying to make those initial Bloody Marys for the list, someone who'd never put together a bar program, who didn't even like Bloody Marys, there were some horrible, horrible results.
Our very own Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues and representing Booker and Dax at the competition, had his own unique take on the Bloody Mary.
So we got the entire staff together, and we said, how can we rethink the Bloody Mary for what we know is going to be a cold day? We didn't know it was going to be snowy. We said, what are we going to do? We have a lot of hot drinks at our bar. So we said, well, let's go hot. What's the best version of hot tomato? And it's Campbell's tomato soup, remixed as a Bloody Mary. And what do you have with that? Grocery sandwich. Done, right?
Done.
So finally, and many drinks later, it was time to announce a winner. And who better to announce it than our own Jen Tulloch?
Before we announce the winners here, it was neck and neck, okay? So congrats to all. However, today's winner of the People's Choice was Burger and Barrel.
Yeah!
Burger and Barrel.
Yeah!
Get away.
Yeah!
does hats. Yes. New category. And if I can get a drum roll, please.
Trophy. Thank you very much. Congrats.
Thank you so much. Judges' choice today was Rouge Chamon.
It's Rouge Chamon with the judges' award.
Congratulations to Rouge Chamon for winning the competition. Thanks for listening, and hope to see you next year. This piece was produced by Jack Inslee, Jesse Kiefer, and Jen Tullock for HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
You're listening to IDID by Obesity on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We'll be right back with The Morning After, so keep it locked.
It is Oscar Sunday, everyone, and our favorite mythical restaurant that celebrates all bad food and wine trends is absolutely having an Oscars party. It's what's on the menu at Chardonnay's. Ah, Joe!
What's on the menu, Chardonnay?
Oh, there we go.
What's on the menu at Chardonnay?
My apologies, everyone.
I mean, we paid a lot of money for that jingle. I mean, I had to buy the person who did that at least four beers before I got her to sing that song.
I thought we had a pretty cool one going there.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, we can make it happen. You're right. Okay, I guess it only cost one beer. Thank you, Nick. So Chardonnay is so excited to celebrate Oscar Sunday. And while our reception on our televisions isn't so good, it's a little fuzzy. Sometimes it kind of like blinks strobe lighty. But the good news is there's about 10 of them. So there'll be, you know, everyone will have a great view. And we're running a drink special. We're going to be doing dollar shots of Jose Cuervo Gold Tequila. No salt, no lime. Just take it like a man. There's also going to be complimentary Goldfish crackers on the bar. We got like kind of a milk carton size box of them. I mean, it's really all we could afford. But hey, it's gold. You know, it goes with the gold tequila, Goldfish. The Oscars gold. I mean, we've really got a theme going on. And we have a prize at the end of the night. It's going to be a handle of Goldschlager. Gold, see? Goldschlager. A whole handle of it. It's really heavy. For the person who can do the best impression of a stoned James Franco hosting the Oscars. So it should be great. I'm looking forward to it. I'm probably going to have too many shots before the end of the night. I'll never know who won Best Picture until the next day. But I'm really looking forward to that. So that's what's on the menu at Chardonnay's. Ooh. It was great to have you guys in studio. Megan, thank you so much for your front of house story. I hope you never see a cat rat again.
Me too, Jess.
And Nick, good luck with Natural Winemaker Week.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
This is The Morning After on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.